everybody. Paro's heart was hardened. That's something that I don't think needs to be explained more than once. But we have to understand why and how, really, I guess that is. We hear it all the time, and it really doesn't get easier to understand as you get older. I thought it would. What does Hashem want from us if he can take away our free will at any point? What could Paro possibly have done? What could he have done in order to improve anything? What could have done to make it a little bit easier? The best way that I can understand this personally is from a simple mashal. If I'm sitting on Shabbos and I am told, somebody tells me, oh, you got to turn off that light. It's too dark, too light in this room. There's no way I'm turning off that light. Yeah. There's no way. Of course you're not going to do that, right? You wouldn't do so. That's not a challenge for me. If somebody challenges me with that, like, I want you to turn off that light. No. Right? Oh, yeah, you better turn off that light. No. I've outgrown that stage. That's not a stage that I'm in right now. Does that mean that I don't get scar every time I pass the light switch? The answer is sort of, yeah. There's no challenge there. If there's no challenge there, how can you get rewarded for something that's right there? It's because once you're in the big leagues, you're supposed to be above all that. A kid, a person who's just started, could get scar for not turning off a light or standing by a light switch and not doing it on Shabbos. But a person where I've already built myself up beyond that, I'm in the big leagues now. I'm in the major leagues. There's no way I would do something like that. So then you wouldn't do it. If a kid can use bumpers when they go bowling, then we all know the score is skewed. Like, my son says to me, like, I got an 143. I'm like, shkoyach. Yeah, of course you got an 143. By the way, it's impressive to get that because, you know, those bounces back and forth, so it's not so easy. If you get 143, that's not such a great, you know, it's not so awesome. On the other hand, when you get older, if you see a guy who's like, I don't know, 30, 40 years old using bumpers, something's wrong. Something's totally wrong with that guy. You look at that guy and you're just like, what's going on over here? When you're on level one in a video game, right, your schar is like, your schar is like, oh, wow, you got past this, whatever it is. On level two, level three, level four, when you go by, it gets even more so. So on level one, you're right, I'm getting scar for not turning off that light switch. When you're on the next level, you're not expected to have that as a challenge. That's not your nisayon anymore. Being on a higher level raises your expectations. So you have the opportunity to do other mitzvahs that a person on level one would never get to. So do you get scar for not turning on that light switch? No, not really, because you're on that next level where you're already getting other opportunities and other expectations and other things are there where your challenge is something totally different. So in a way, you're making it harder for yourself. And in another way, you're making life a little bit easier for you. It's a different type of thing over here. It's a different challenge. Paro was on such a low level of gaiva and kavod, what he wanted and what he wanted to get out of this world, he couldn't let the Jews go. Even if you would have given it to him and you would have made rational arguments that made sense. And that's what the Chartumim did in the beginning of this week's parsha. They turned to Paro and they said, don't you realize Paro's already destroyed, that Mitzrayim is already destroyed? Don't you realize we lost? Paro, we lost. And it made a lot of sense. And he even called Moshe and Aaron back in. But it didn't make a difference. Punishments meant nothing to him. He would go on. And he knew deep down inside, I have to let them go. And he wanted to let them go. But he just couldn't let them go. And that's what it means, Paro hardens his heart. Hardening your heart is something that you yourself do. You do it yourself. You don't have other people. You yourself are in charge of doing this. And that's what happened. I don't know if you want to call it like HaKadosh Baruch Hu who's directly involved or indirectly involved. This is Paro bringing himself to a point where he could not make the correct decision if you put everything in front of him. And unfortunately, I've seen that with other people. I have a guy who unfortunately did a lot of drugs in his youth, a lot of drugs. And now he's trying to get over it. But he's older now. And now he's like coming to me and he's begging me, like, what am I supposed to do about a job? I it's almost too late. I hear you and I don't know what to do. But this guy wants a real job. He looks like a druggie. He acts like a druggie. He talks like a druggie. He's not a druggie. He's been off of drugs for 4 or 5 years. But what do you do for a guy like that? He can't get over how he looks because he did drugs for 10, 15 years straight. Now what are you going to do with this guy? There's nothing you can do for him. And I feel really bad. But like there really isn't anything. At a certain point, you led yourself down your own path of destruction. And this is where he is right now. So how do you help him? You do as best as you can. You give him suggestions that are like a little bit lower. But like you don't have any expectations. He's on level one and he can't really get past level one. That's where Paro is. And it's so crazy. Can he be blamed for the decisions that he made now? Right now, no. He can't be blamed for what he makes by levels, you know, from Makas Shchinin on. But the fact is, he can, because he should have done something to change that before, and he knew he should have, and he didn't. And that's right there. So what we have in ourselves, and although we might not realize it, are moments of inspiration. There's a moment where something could happen and you can change everything about yourself. There's that moment right there, a moment of wisdom and seichel. We all know that happens to every single one of us. Maybe daily, maybe every other day, where just thought comes into our head, like, what am I doing? What is it? What am I doing? Well, why? What is this? And we all have it. And then it's just a question of ignoring it, or not necessarily ignoring it, but just being like, okay, give me a second. I got to work on this, and then afterward I'll get back to you, thought. And then you just don't get back to it. See, when it comes to that type of inspiration, the key is to grab that moment and do something about it right away. In Sichos Musar, Rav Chaim Shmulevitz explains it in this way, and it's a really brilliant argument. Shaul HaMelech had promised his daughters to David in marriage for one of two things, either for killing the Pelishtim, for taking the Orlas of the Pelishtim, whatever it was. And Merav had already been taken away, and that was something different. But he promised Michal over to David. And Michal was married to David. They were fully married. They were together. She might not have had any kids from it, but they were fully married. And at one point, David HaMelech had Michal taken from him. Shaul HaMelech took Michal back and gave her over to another person. So the Navi says, gave her over to somebody else. Now what happened? It was a shaila. It might have been a halachic shaila. Shaul Paskin one way, David Paskin the other way. Whatever it is, it might have been about the orlas. Is orlas the orlas that he took of the Pelishtim? Is that considered a shavapruta? Is that worth anything or not? Was he really Makadish or was it al tanai? Okay, so there are kashas. There are kashas in the Gemara. And Shaul HaMelech Paskin that they weren't married, but the halacha was like David. They were married. They were 100% married. Michal and David HaMelech were 100% married. Shaul HaMelech took Michal and gave her to Palti ben Laish. Palti ben Laish was another man. We know nothing about him except for this. But Paltiel ben Laish. The Gemara says Paltiel is he was saved by God. What did he do? Says the Gemara, it's in Sanhedrin in the second Tariq. He took a sword and he stuck it right down the middle of the bed. And even though he had to marry Michal, the king told him to do so. And even though he had to be in the same bedroom as Michal, the king told him to do so. Put a sword in the middle of the bed, and he said, anyone who does this act will be pierced with this sword. Now, says Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, and it makes a lot of sense. Palti ben Laish made that decision right away, and as soon as he had that feeling to himself, and he said to himself, I can't do this, he immediately took the sword, stuck it in the middle of the bed, and he said, I cannot do it. If Palti ben Laish would have waited, let's say he would have waited a day, so I'm like, okay, I'm not supposed to be married to Michal, but let me look into the matter. Maybe if I check up, maybe there's a Tosos that says that I can, right? Maybe he would have looked into it. And goes back, Shaul HaMelech's not a fool. Maybe he has a sheet over here, right? Palti ben Laish would have looked into it. I guarantee you within 48 hours, he would have been not just married with Michal, he would have married, been together with Michal. He would have matured it up for himself and found a heter. The king is telling me to be together with her. We paskin like the king right now, because they didn't know back then that the halacha was like David HaMelech. We paskin like the king. The king told me to be together with her, and she's in my bedroom. She's right here. I don't know if Michal was willing or not. That I don't know. But Palti ben Laish could have very well have failed this test and been together. What was the difference? What made the difference in the case of Palti ben Laish? Because he took the sword immediately and said no. He said, I'm not doing this. At the first second, right, that could have, that was all he did. He was inspired. He did something about it, and that was it. Now you know who Palti ben Laish is. Had he not been brought in, number one, he wouldn't be known as Paltiel, saved by God. Whatever his name was, maybe it was just Palti, he would have been known as Palti for the rest of his life. Nobody's saying he would have done a sin. That's not an Avera. He did what he was supposed to do. But at the end of the day, was he really, could he have done better? The answer is yes, clearly. Can you imagine he would have gone up to Shemayim? They said, hey, you know what we would have said about you had you stayed away from Michal? We would have said about you, even though Sheker Achim Behevel Ayovi, Isha Yiras Hashem Hisisal. You are Isha Yiras Hashem Hisisal. You're one of the greatest people to have ever lived. We would have called you Palti El. You were saved by Hashem. We had a special makom for you in Gan Eden. But you didn't take advantage of that first second. And therefore, look, you're going to get Gan Eden. You get like that shack over there. You see that shack? That's yours. And he's like, why? I didn't do anything wrong. You're right, you didn't do anything wrong. But you didn't do what was right, because you didn't take advantage of that one moment. You didn't do it. Menachos, daf mem dalem alef. Who doesn't know this Gemara? With the man with the zona, right? He knew there was a zona all the way across the land. I'm not going to say the whole story, but he went there. And we all know what happened. As he was taking off his clothes to be able to go up on the bed, the tzitzis slapped him in the face. right? So it slapped in the face. He sat down, he started crying, the zona comes down, is there anything wrong? The ambiance not okay. He said everything's perfect. You, right, beautiful woman, I can't do this. I just can't do it. And we don't know what happened. There's no question. All of us have been slapped in the face by our tzitzis before, right? But there's a decision to make at that point. Is it just like, oh, stupid tzitzis? Or is it, okay, clearly I shouldn't be doing this. This man made a split-second decision. But he's not the only person in the story that made that decision. The zona right then and there decided she's out. She's stopping what she's doing. She sold everything. She took a third of the money for herself. She took a third of the money, gave it to the government, a third of the money, gave it to tzedakah. Right? And she left immediately, followed the guy, went back to Rebchia. See, the point is, she did it immediately. And that was she got something from it. It's not just he that made the decision. It was she that made the decision. Split second, right there at that time, because the pshat is they didn't hesitate. They saw a moment of inspiration, a flash of inspiration. And I guarantee you as well, had that guy hesitated, he would have been gone. Had the girl hesitated, she would have been gone. And we would have lost both of them forever. But they saw it, they took it, and they had it. Rachav HaZona, I saw the most amazing medrash. Rachav HaZona, we all know Rachav HaZona. She was, you know, one of the worst people. Did you know she was 10 years old when Bnei Yisrael crossed the Yam Suf? 10 years old, and she was inspired. And she said, I want to join the Jews. Like Yisro. Same way Yisro heard about Kriyas Yam Suf, Mohammed HaMalik. She wanted to join the Jews, but they wouldn't let her because she was too beautiful. So she hesitated. And for the next 40 years, she became a Zona. You went from being part of Klal Yisrael, she would have been married to Yoshua. She would have married Yoshua. This is a woman that was destined for Yoshua, because in the end, she did marry Yoshua. She would have been destined to marry Yoshua. That was going to be her husband. And if she would have left immediately, she would have had 40 years of being together, Biktusho Bitaro, with Yoshua. And she hesitated. She delayed just for a moment. And what happened? 40 years of Znus. 40 years until finally Kalev and Pinchas come into Yericho. They stay by her house, and she finally gets that flash of inspiration back. She says, you know what? I'm going to do it this time. This I'm going to do. And she lets them free, and she gets saved, and then she marries Yoshua. But she wasted. She wasted 40 years of her life. 40 years gone, in which she could have been part of Klal Yisrael. And granted, she made up for it. The children, the great-great-grandchildren that she had. She only had daughters. But she had tremendous, tremendous tzaddikim that came from her. All the great people. But think, that is the concept of just a second. Just 1 second. Sichos Muslim in this mimer says a rainbow is a great example of this. The wording of the pasuk is V'haya ba'anani anana aretz. When I put my clouds upon the land, v'nir aso hakeshes ba'anan, you will see a rainbow in that cloud. V'zacharti es bris asher b'nei menechem. I will remember the bris that I made together with you. Right? I made the bris between the two of us. Kadosh Baruch Hu needs a rainbow to remember not to destroy the world. But every time a Kadosh Baruch Hu is ready to destroy the world, all right, that's it. Right? Like chas v'shalom, like Zeus. He's ready to destroy the world. He's ready to take his thunderbolts and destroy the world. Then he's like, oh, rainbow. All right, I guess not. Of course that doesn't happen. Well, what in the world is HaKadosh Baruch Hu telling us with this? Well, and it's a pasuk. This is not a medrash. This is a pasuk. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name, V'zacharti es brisi asher b'nei u'b'neichem. And the pshat is, it's for us. It's for us. We look at the world in front of us. We see what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has for us. And when we get that flash of inspiration, we have to make our own rainbow. We have to make our own bris. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't need it, but he needs us to see that the same way that he made a bris for himself to remember what he did, he made something, an oath in the sky to remember what he did. We have to make something. We have to do something. The concept of what? Tying a little string around your finger to remember something? Putting something in your phone as a little reminder? This is a little bit more. You have to do something right there. At the phone, the technology thing that they had not too long ago, if you made a decision right there, if you did something right then, took off something off your phone, it worked. If you didn't, if you said, you know what, I'll wait a couple days, and then I'll try to do something, it didn't work. It doesn't work that way. Maybe 1 out of 20 people were able to do something. But really, what I suggested and what I wanted to go through and what didn't happen is I said, everyone should get up right now and do something. Just do something with your phone. Just give it over to somebody else and make him make a password. Do something. Because if you don't do it right then, it's just not going to happen. And so many people, it didn't happen. Because they did so, whatever it was, and then what? And then what? So I got rid, while I was up there, I got rid of certain any app that I didn't need. NFL app I'd still need. But aside from that, well, not anymore, right? But anything else, right? There was no need for it. So I got rid of it. It just didn't make any sense for me to have it. That's the constant reminder of your power, your ability, what you can do. Bereishis Rabbah. there was a man by the name of Rabbi Yochum. Now, this medrash I've seen all over the past couple years. I don't know why all of a sudden it became famous, but I saw it originally in Alina L'Shabeach, then I found it in another sefer, and then I found it in, and it's just all over the place, this sefer, this story. Rabbi Yochum was the nephew, the son of the sister of Rabbi Yossi ben Yoaz. I don't know if you can call him Rabbi Yossi ben Yoaz. Yossi ben Yoaz, one of the Zugos. Yossi ben Yoaz, Yossi ben Yochanan, one of the early Zugos. Yossi ben Yoaz was being taken out on a horse to be killed for keeping Shabbos. I don't know if this is the Greeks or something else, right? But he was being taken out to be killed. He was riding a horse. It's almost like being blindfolded, thrown on the horse itself in order to be killed, bring him over to the gallows. At the same time, on Shabbos, Yossi ben Yoaz's nephew, Yochum, was also riding a horse. But he was off. He was off, and he was riding a horse. And their horses met with one another. Yochum saw his uncle Rabbi Yossi, right, who was being led off to death. And he said to him, he's like, look at the horse your master gave you. Look what God did for you. And look at the horse my master gave me. Look what I got. Right? I'm riding to go do something fun. You're riding to your death. See the difference between us. And Yossi ben Yoaz, difference in the, whatever. The Medrash says the following. It says, if you're being rewarded for sinning against him, can you imagine what my reward is for keeping his word? You can imagine what my reward is, right? So Yochum turned to him and said, but you're being killed. And he said, exactly. If this is my punishment for keeping his word, can you imagine what your punishment is for not keeping his word? Can you imagine what you're going to be punished with? And Yochum heard it. Now, I don't know, guys. If I would have heard that, I probably would have just laughed it off. It's the power of late sonos. Just make fun of it. Just be like, yeah, whatever. And just not do anything. Yochum had a flash of inspiration. All of a sudden, he said to himself, he's right. He's right. He's a smart kid. He understood this. And he realized, like, he's right. He's 100% right. So what did he do? He made a contraption right there on that spot. Put himself on fire, threw himself off a cliff while hanging himself, and landed on a sword. Did all four Arba Mises Bezdin. Did all four Arba Mises Bezdin all there at once. What? It's pretty impressive, right? Arba Mises Bezdin all there at once. He died. And Yossi ben Yoaz was still being ridden to the gallows. And he heard a baskol come out from Shemayim. Yochum ben Yoaz, whoever it was, Yochum is going to the highest level of Gan Eden. That's what he heard. And he says, for that? He's like, he made it before me. He got there before I did. Because when Yezir looked up and it said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's the line that B'shah Achas, in 1 hour you can get. I can't believe it. How in the world did he make it there before him? But Yochum ben Yochum immediately made it over to Gan Eden before Yossi ben Yoaz died. Because he took it. He had that one thing. So lesson number three from Rav Victor Miller is to always do something L'Shem Shemayim. To know that sometimes you're not going to be rewarded for what you're doing. Sometimes nothing will happen. No one will ever know about it. No one will ever find out that you ever did it. Take a dish, right, that's sitting in the sink, the milchik dish, whatever dishes have to be washed. You just make sure that you wash it, right? You pick up something that somebody didn't have, that somebody left on the floor. Nobody notices that you picked it up. You make sure that somebody gets back, he's returned something that he might have lost, right? Something is there, and you just make sure that he gets it back. He'll never know. You make sure that somebody who could use a little bit of money, you give him $5, you just put it on his bed. So no one's going to know that you're the person that gave him the $5. The only person that knows is you and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rebbe, nobody else will have any idea. All those things, you're doing those purely L'Shem Shemayim. You're building yourself up in the right way. You're taking inspiration that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you that little bit, and you're doing something immediately for it. Not for yourself. Because yeah, there'll probably be a reward, and it's very hard for us to do things without rewards, and I get it. But you're doing it without anyone recognizing that you did it in Olam Hazeh. No one will know. No one on earth. Don't tell anyone about it. Keep it to yourself. Don't even write it down. There's no need for you to even remember it. So that when you get to Shemayim for 120, you go up there and HaKadosh Baruch Hu like, gives you a laundry list of crazy amounts of things. And you're like, what is all that? And you're just like, this is the list of what you did L'Shem Shemayim. This is what really sends you to Gan Eden. That's what sends you in. And I realize, I know the hypocrisy of doing something L'Shem Shemayim, and thus, so that you can get rewarded in the highest level of Gan Eden for it. I realize that's hypocritical. I do realize that. Think of it as, you're doing it just because you don't want to get rewarded for it in this world. And by that, eventually it changes your attitude about everything. Well, you start doing things without even realizing, without even recognizing it. And all of a sudden, you'll start doing things that are almost automatic. and you become a totally different person. Keep it a secret. And if you do that, you take that flash, that little bit of inspiration, that little bit that Akash Baruch is giving, you take it for yourself, forget about not being like Paro. You've just improved yourself to level 10. Let's say level 10 is the highest level, right? You're not expected to do the little stuff. You have bigger challenges, and maybe you won't pass all those challenges. It's possible you won't be able to do it, but you're already on level 10. Do you know how great of a person you are? You're an unbelievable person. Get to that level. And who cares if you can't get up to the level of Moshe Rabbeinu or to Aaron or the great men that are out there? You can be the best that you can be on that level, on the total level that you have. But it starts with you doing these small, tiny, little things, L'shem Shemayim. Start doing it that way. Okay, guys, we'll stop at that.